This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
And we are live here on Pet Life Radio, waiting for that thumbs up from Mark, and here on Instagram as well. And I see we have some people joining us already. I hope you have some good questions ready for me. Hello, Bethany. God, it's nice to get all these people. At 9 o'clock in the morning, I'm thrilled that you're here joining me. So anyway, here for you, here for your pets. We are live here for the next 30 minutes. Here on Pet Life Radio, Ask the Vet with Dr. Jeff. So anything you want to talk about is fair game. I'm going to start with, I have a lot of philosophical stuff to talk about, as you know, and we would very interested to hear your thoughts. But I was, one of my clients was in this week. I'm waving, when I lean over at you, I'm waving to you. And he was lamenting that his veterinary ophthalmologist, we'll talk about that in a second, about honey being good for dogs. So his veterinary ophthalmologist was retiring. And I said, oh my God, who is that? And she told me who it is. I had no idea. I mean, mind you, this is to become a veterinary ophthalmologist. It's a lot of work. You have a year after 4 years of veterinary school, you have a year of internship, then you have, it's probably 3 years, maybe 2-3 years of postgraduate training. Then you have to sit for your boards and you have to present cases. And then finally, if you pass your boards and everything, you become a board certified veterinary specialist in this case, ophthalmology. She then went to practice. I think she worked for a year or two, and then she opened her own practice in, I think, 2013. And here it is, 2024, 11 years later, and she's calling it quits. Now, first of all, that's a huge problem for LA because we don't have that many board certified ophthalmologists in town. And I think there were four, and I think now we're down to three in the LA area. So what surprises me is that this is the trend that we're seeing, is that it's become sort of a part-time profession. It is more and more difficult, as many of you know, more and more difficult to get in to see your veterinarian. And for guys like me, as I often joke, idiots like me, who doesn't know how to say no, I'm getting super busy because nobody else is going to see these clients. And then I always say that what's going to happen is that it's a domino effect. So then people like me get so busy, and then people can't see me, only not because I won't say no, I won't want to, I can't. And other veterinarians are literally turning people away to urgent care, to emergency, because they just don't want to work. It's become what we say a part-time profession. But here's my thing. And we, you know, we've talked about this before, but do you care where you go, which vets you see, or do you not care? Do you care? You know, I'll go anywhere. What's the difference? I'll pay for whatever I have to pay for, and that's it. And if you go another time, you see a different vet, that's okay. You go another time, you see a different vet, that's okay too. And that's not how I envision myself. I could joke, I'm the old Dr. Welby. For those of you who aren't old enough to know that, look up Dr. Marcus Welby. But he was that really family doctor. And people went to him, not to their office, not to their aggregator, not to their corporate-owned, you know, monster. They went actually to see that doctor. So anyway, it's a different philosophy. We'd love to chime in and let me know what you think. While you are thinking and having the guts to shout out to me, hello, Janice. Honey. A lot of people use Manuka honey topically. As far as honey, you know, you got to be very careful with anything that's too sweet. And it's a volume issue. It's not, I mean, it's a little honey is fine. If you need it to help sweeten up something and help take their medication or whatever, that's okay. But you got to be really careful because too much sugar absorbs and holds water. And then that could be a problem. So like, especially in the brain. So a little is fine. I'm sure there are a lot of things you're feeding your dogs have some sugar in it. Look, let's put it this way. I'd rather be real honey than the artificial sweeteners because you get into things like xylitol, which they also call birch sugar, which is a very dangerous term, by the way. Birch, you think it's safe. It's coming from a tree. What could be bad? Well, it could be very bad. It could be very toxic, actually. So avoid things like that. It's one of those things, a little is okay. Don't overdo it. You shouldn't be feeding your dog honey every single day. As far as allergies, I can't say. I'm not familiar with any. Let's put it this way. I've never seen it used as an anecdote for allergies. So if there is literature out there, if you're reading something, you might want to talk to more of a naturopath or homeopathic doctor. I can check a couple of, I have two friends of mine that are naturopathic veterinarians. I can talk to them, but I've never seen it as far as a treatment for allergies. Doesn't mean it can't help. I just never seen it as a treatment. My Chihuahua mix, Julianne to know, 12 and has a heart murmur. He needs teeth cleaning. Is it dangerous for him to go under anesthesia? Well, first of all, it really depends on the degree of the murmur. And was there an echocardiogram ever done? Now, I think we've talked about this, but when the new diagnosis for heart disease is no longer listening to the murmur, taking a chest x-ray, maybe an EKG, that's still part of the basic work. But as far as getting a true diagnosis, finding out exactly what's wrong and exactly what we need to do about it, you really need to get an echocardiogram. That is a cardiac ultrasound, because that measures, for example, you take an x-ray and you see a big heart. How much of that big heart, let's say a big ventricle, how much of this wall, how much is actual the ventricle itself, okay, the chamber? And you don't know, because you can't tell that on an x-ray. Ah, but an ultrasound, you can tell it all. When you have a murmur, how much blood flow is being flown backwards from, say, the ventricle back into the atrium because of a leaky valve? Usually it's the mitral valve, which is the left-sided heart. It's a bivalve as opposed to the right side, which is a tricuspid valve. But that's when you hear a murmur. And more often than not, more dogs get left-sided heart failure than right-sided. But regardless, you don't know, not by an x-ray, not by listening. I can hear a murmur, but how bad is it really? So again, echocardiography can answer that question. It can measure pressures of the blood going backwards through the valves. It can measure the pressure of the valve, the blood leaving the heart through the aorta. So this is where the issues are. Once we know that, then I can answer your question. However, I will say that unless it's a severe heart disease, usually the cardiologist who does the echo will report about what are the potential risks of anesthesia. I have anesthetized thousands of dogs and cats with heart murmurs and did just fine, because it all depends on the nature of the degree of the murmur and the heart disease. Now, of course, we take precautions. We want to keep the fluids a little lower because you don't want to overload them, because the hearts are obviously in mild dysfunction. My induction agent of choice is called propofol. Then we put them on either sevoflurane or isoflurane. Sevo is preferred, especially if it's an older dog with heart disease. And most of these dogs with heart disease are older. And it's extreme caution during monitoring. And these dogs do just fine. Now, sometimes when it comes to something like mouth, and this is what I often say to the client, it's more dangerous not to do the teeth than it is to anesthetize them to do the teeth, because the oral disease can end up in the heart valves. In fact, I could argue that one of the reasons why your dog has a heart murmur was because of lousy teeth in the first place, because the plaque gets on the valves and then we get something called endocarditis, which is a bacterial infection of the heart valves, thus could end up in a murmur. And also they can conjugate and colonize in the kidneys. So you have the secondary heart disease and kidney disease because of a terrible mouth. So my recommendation is it is often worth it and necessary to do the teeth, even though there is a little bit more risk under the anesthesia. But again, I would first have everything evaluated by a cardiologist, get that echocardiogram done. All right, waving to my cloud, hold on, and to Missy. All right, my puppy, 8-month-old Cavalier King Charles, pee smells because I started on a new daily vitamin, but do I need to worry? So most little puppies are not going to have urinary tract infection. However, I never put it past them. So if there is any problem with frequent urination, straining to urinate, blood or discolor to the urine, now in this case, there's no big deal to get a urinalysis done. Because again, people think, well, why am I spending the money on urinalysis? It's going to be normal. You know what? That's a really good thing to know, that it's normal, because it really changes how we are then going to proceed, knowing that there's one less problem to worry about. So I would do it. Now, because I started her, and there's another word that I was just looking for reading it, and that is her, as opposed to him. So a female dogs in general are more prone to urinary tract infections. Now, you have an 8-month-old puppy, probably not the cleanest thing in the world, probably out there playing and getting dirty. Could she have an ascending urinary tract infection? Absolutely. So in this case, I definitely get a urinalysis, and then worry about it. I don't think the vitamin itself would necessarily cause it, but it could. I don't know what's in the vitamins, but it could. But just because of the abnormality, it wouldn't be a bad idea to just have your urinalysis done. Okay, Todd, how you doing? How often should you brush your dog's teeth? So Langley Marr, love that question a lot, because you're not going to like the answer though. All right, let's go back to teeth 101. The issues are that We see tremendous amount of dental and gum disease in dogs and cats, 100%. Why? Because we're not brushing their teeth regularly. So when you think about this, first of all, how does it get there? No different than us. What happens with us, we brush our teeth probably at least two, if not more times a day. We eat, we leave film on our mouths, on our teeth, and that is called plaque. And that is what we can remove through brushing. If we don't brush our teeth, and if you don't brush your dog's teeth, within several days, not weeks, days, that plaque mixing with the oral saliva and the normal bacteria in the mouth hardens and becomes tartar or calculus. Now we have a problem because you cannot get rid of that tartar or calculus by brushing. So in answer to your question, we need to brush our pet's teeth ideally every day. Even if you do it every other day, you're still okay. If you can successfully get rid of that film, that plaque on a regular basis, by regular, I mean daily or every other day, then there will be a lot less for the bacteria and the saliva and the oral flora to work on to harden it into calculus or tartar. So the answer is, if we brushed our pet's teeth more frequently, then we would have many fewer problems. Just try it on yourself. I'm just joking. You don't want to try it yourself. Don't brush your teeth for 2 weeks. See what your mouth looks like and smells like, by the way. Not pretty. So continue. You want to get in a habit. I always keep saying I'm going to demo it someday. There's a really easy way to brush your pet's teeth. And I don't know, maybe I'm going to have to plan better. But at the beginning of one of my show, I'm going to have one of my dogs with me. And we're going to do a quick demo because it's really not that difficult. So anyway, that's what I'd recommend. Now, Bethany, how contagious is the influenza still recommending the vaccine? So the answer is, it is contagious. I'm not ready to not recommend it yet. You know, again, I follow the lead of some of my colleagues. My friend Mike Lappin at Colorado State is a veterinary internist who has a subspecialty in infectious disease. And their lab has been studying this. And they think that that respiratory disease complex, when an animal presented before with a cough, being boarded, going to daycare, we say, Bordetella, let's get the Bordetella shot if they frequent these places every 6 months, and we should be good. But now I'm getting cases that are not responding as well to treatment. And my suspicion, therefore, is that there may be a viral component here too. And they were talking about the CRIDC, Canine Respiratory Infectious Disease Complex. CIRDC, say that really fast. So Canine Infectious Respiratory Disease Complex. So my recommendation is still do it. It's once a year. It's safe. It's the get the bivalent, which is H3N2 and H3N8. And just have it done. Whenever you do the Bordetella, just do it. I think it'll just be safer. When we start seeing refractory cases of what we suspected was just plain old tracheobronchitis, i.e. Bordetella infection, then I would say, nah, we don't need it. But we are seeing more and more. So Todd, how you doing? Danielle, how are you? Hope you had a good fast. Let's see. Janice, hello, JB. How risky are liver biopsies in an older dog? Now that's a really good question. You know what? That's a great question. I'm going to leave you with that while we take a break, because that way you'll hopefully stay around, because things have changed when it comes to liver biopsies as well. So don't go away. We'll be back after these short words. Gifts for my pets. Sparkle and love. Under the tree. From heaven above. Gifts for my pets. Joy. Without a care. Elevate your cat's eating experience with the Cat Tree Tray. The Cat Tree Tray keeps your cat's food off the floor and is conveniently located on the cat tree. Go to cattreetray.com. Bring home a luxury French bulldog from the world-famous Tom King's Kennel. Premium French bulldogs from excellent European bloodlines. Superior puppy care and lifetime health guarantee for your perfect companion. Use code TOMKINGSMAGIC for a magical holiday discount. Visit TomKingsKennel.com and find your perfect Frenchie today. Your pets will be over the moon with sparkly jewelry from Over the Moon Jewelry. Beautiful handcrafted matching jewelry for you and your pets. Wire-wrapped, beaded contemporary necklaces, bracelets, and charms. Go to OverTheMoonJewelry.com. Gifts for my pets. Joy in the air. Unwrapping dreams without a care.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
We are back. So we're talking about this heart disease thing again. So yeah, definitely you want to, if you're in the area, give me a call and I'll we can arrange for our veterinary cardiologist to work with, sends her echocardiogram text. And the texts are the ones that do it anyway. So she'll do it. She puts everything on a thumb drive, takes it back to the doc. The doc does a thorough analysis with all the readings and the recommendations, including for anesthesia. And that is the best way to go. And it saves you a little bit of money. It's still a little cheaper than going to their office, but it's very convenient because she comes to us once or twice a week. Now, back to the liver biopsy. So things have changed. Technically, it's a pretty technical discussion. If we had a liver disease, you know, I would see the ultrasound and we get the liver values. Liver values are very high, a sick dog, non-responsive, or only partially responsive. And it's time, we need to know what's going on. Let's take a liver biopsy. What we used to do is first do a bleeding screen, which we still would do. And that's to make sure they clot. Then we would use our ultrasound probe and something called a true cut biopsy punch. And using the ultrasound as our guide, we would take this true cut, which is a pretty thick needle with a sliding, a little groove. And you would stick the needle in, slide the thing back, and that would slice off a little piece of liver and put it into that deep groove. And then we pull the needle out. We take this little thing, look like a little worm, maybe this big, and it was a little round thing, and we'd send that to the pathologist. We would keep an eye on the liver, of course, right afterwards to see if there's any major bleeding. It's going to be bleeding, of course. It's a liver. But that's why we did the clotting screen before to make sure they clot. And look, I've done, I wouldn't say thousands, but certainly hundreds of them over the years and never had a problem. But apparently there have been enough problems that technique, which was the standard way back, has been questioned. So now, again, with the advancement of veterinary medicine and equipment, they are now recommending doing it laparoscopy. So I don't do laparoscopic surgeries. So I would send it to one of my colleagues who does. And there they do it under, first of all, with the laparoscope, you can actually make sure you're getting an area of the liver that looks abnormal. Can't do that using an ultrasound probe. All right. You're not seeing the liver. Secondly, you can see exactly where you're going to stick your little needle for a biopsy. And you're going to be able to literally view it and maybe even stop the bleeding all through the laparoscope. So we're talking about safety, absolutely. Efficiency, absolutely more efficient. You can aim exactly for the problem area of the liver that looks grossly abnormal. All right. Now, so that's all positives. What's the negative? Well, like everything else in the world, it is expensive because you're looking at major expensive equipment, major extensive training to be able to do it. The guy that does it for me is a boarded surgeon. And I mean, he does a great job, but it is much, much safer. And because you are able to visualize exactly the area of the liver that you're attacking, that you're getting a sample from, it is much more efficient. So the money will be better spent. I have done many of those hundreds. Many of those have come back inconclusive. So now what? What's the other option then, which is when we had a situation like that, is to do a surgery to actually cut them open up. You see the liver. You can actually take your sample. You can cut a wedge. You can watch the bleeding. But then you're looking at a much more major surgery. Whereas with the laparoscope, you take three little holes, everything is done through the scope, and it's amazing. So my recommendation is to, if there is a problem and the suspicion or the next recommendation by your veterinarian was to get a biopsy, I would have it done laparoscopically. Okay, that was my, that's my feeling. All right, how often do you get your dog's teeth properly cleaned? Okay, so that is really a function of how bad the teeth are. I would say once a year, and I love you put the word properly because we're going to talk about that. So once a year, for sure. Many dogs, as they get older, especially the smaller breeds, they seem to need it twice a year, because they accumulate that tartar really quickly. Now, properly, going to these anesthesia frees, I can't say it's a total waste of money. It's not, but it is not nearly as effective. And if you rely on it solely, it's going to be dangerous. Now, what do I mean by that? If you get your pet's teeth cleaned by your veterinarian once a year, and because of the fact how fast the plaque builds up, at the six-month point, you want to go one of these anesthesia-free places so they can do it without anesthesia and scale away all the tartar from the crown, from the surface. Trust me, they're not effectively getting under the gums. And that's where all the disease is starting and taking place. And that's where the disease goes up into the bloodstream, by the way. Something that's caked on the tooth itself, not a problem. And it looks ugly. It's going to cause smell, but it's not a medical problem. Once it gets under the gums, now you got yourself a medical problem. And the study I've shared with you before, by going to these places and not being able to thoroughly clean under the gums, sets up severe, not only root and tooth disease, but bone disease. And it erodes away at the bone. And what happens is these teeth now become very mobile and you got to end up pulling. So yeah, short term, you pick them up after that day of cleaning, you open, you lift up the lift. Oh my God, how pretty, how nice, great, great, great. Keep it up and your dog's going to lose teeth. Case in point, one of my clients, great client, but it was for money reasons, whatever, was going to these places for years. She came in and the teeth just were horrendous and they were so mobile. Two little Pomeranians, adorable dogs. One of them, I had to pull 12 teeth and the other one, 15 teeth. And trust me, I am not a tooth puller. If I can save a tooth, I will. My criteria are much more stringent. I say much looser, pardon the pun when it comes to teeth, than the veterinary dentist. They'll pull any tooth that has some gum recession, even if you can see a little bit of the root. In their book, that tooth is, even though it's solidly impacted in the bone, they're pulling it. I like to wait a little bit. It's got to have, obviously, severe discoloration. It's got to be loose. The gum recession has to be tremendous. The bifurcation of the roots is like so huge. And the tooth is hanging in. Though it's still tight in the bone, but you can tell it's hanging on by a thread. Then I'm pulling that tooth. But not aggressive when it comes to tooth pulling. And yet, I had to pull 15 teeth on one and 12 of the other. That kind of tells you. All right. Symptoms of urinary tract infection in female dogs. How do you know a dog has an infection? So good question. So the typical symptom signs are going to be, first of all, very frequent urinations, and especially for females. Females, especially spayed females, they usually go out like mine, my little Georgie. She's got one good pee, and that's it for the rest of the walk. My obnoxious male dogs are peeing on every tree, and they have nothing left. They lift their leg, and you're watching, nothing's coming out anymore. So females, they usually are more dainty. When they do their business, they take care of it once and done. Georgie, sometimes they go twice in a long walk, but that's about it. So frequent urinations or attempts to urinate, drinking more water, smelly urine, even some blood-tinged urine or darker, just a change in color, might all indicate a UTI, urinary tract infection. So if you are seeing any of these, but the fact that, you know, you're asking, anything that changes the norm when it comes to urinating would be highly suspicious. Why? Because female dogs are more prone to urinary tract infections than male dogs. And that's just the nature of anatomy. So I would have that checked if any of those, get a urine sample. Now, also, when you're getting a urine sample, it's very important. I know people get freaked out when they see this. It is best to get a urine by the veterinarian using an ultrasound, and it's called cystocentesis. We're taking the urine directly out of the bladder. Why? Because if you have a bladder infection or there's some urethral issue, and if you do a free catch urine, because of the anatomy of a dog, you're going to probably pick up some bacteria. But the question is, was that bacteria around the outside of the urethra? Is it just picking up on the way on the exit on the way out into this cup, wherever you're collecting it? Or is it actually coming from the bladder? You don't know. So the only way to know for sure is you want to get your urine directly out of the bladder. If that urine has a lot of white cells, abnormal amount of white cells or bacteria, most likely you have a UTI. Now, if you have very few white cells and no bacteria, then if it's an older dog, still showing clinical signs, okay, I would culture that urine anyway if it's very dilute. Now, if it's concentrated and there's no bacteria, no white cells, then I'm pretty gutsy. I'd say it's probably not an infection. But some of the internists will culture anyway. I'm not a fan, just so you know. And I see this all the time. And it quite frankly pisses me off, pardon the pun, as we're talking about urination. But these so many hospitals, so many doctors, they automatically, when you go in for your analysis, a basic UA, for whatever reason, they're automatically doing a culture, which of course is costing you several hundred dollars more. And then I get the results of the urine and it's perfect. Why'd they do a culture? So please question it all the time. You do not need a culture unless there are certain evidences that there is a bladder infection. Most commonly, bacteria and high white cell count. Anything greater than 4 white cells per high power field. That can indicate certainly inflammation, but also maybe an infection, even though they didn't see any bacteria. That's why cystocentesis is the way to go. And what I usually do is I send two tubes. One says culture if, and the lab notes, don't culture automatically. But now you have my second tube ready to go, that if the result comes back one day, you're looking at a one-day difference between starting a culture now when you didn't need to and only starting it when you need to. One day. It's okay. The dog's been going on for how many days already? One day is not going to make a difference. So then if that urinalysis comes back with greater than 4 white cells per high power field or bacteria, I call the lab and say, okay, run that culture and sensitivity. So just a different practice style, but I can tell you, I like mine a whole lot better. Justin, how often should you brush your teeth? So daily is best, and every other day probably is going to be fine as well. But if you wait 4 days or 5 days, that plaque, that film, is going to start to harden, become calculus or tartar, and you will not be able to get it off. So my dog's values are normal, but there's a mass. Okay, so if they picked up a mass, yes, I would think a biopsy is recommended. And as per our discussion, if you really want to get an answer once, and a good one, a real answer, I would either do surgical biopsy, or now with many doctors out there using a laparoscope, I would do it laparoscopically. I think that would be your best way to go. But we can always do surgical. Healthy fruits and vegetables can help old dogs and cats with arthritis. This is where we get into that gray zone. You know, I take antioxidants. The science is out there, but not conclusive. I take glucosamine chondroitin. The science is out there, but not conclusive. So do I stop? I can only tell you that I feel great and I'm running around and I'm playing ball with guys literally half my age and younger. And can I say it's all genetics? Maybe. But I feel so good taking these supplements and all the daily vitamins and my NAD plus, right? Why do I want to stop? So yes, they're loaded with natural vitamins, antioxidants. So I think it could help. It would make sense to me if it did help, but I'm not going to tell you, yes, it's a must. You should do it. This is where I anthropomorphize a little bit. And because I like it and I feel it's good, you know, perfect example, why I started taking antioxidants. Because I was asked, I did a paper for a magazine I used to write for on, this was years ago when this whole antioxidant thing was just kind of hitting the news and the market. And I was so convinced by the science that was there that there are benefits. I said, heck, I don't care what they end up after all the paperwork and all the reports and the evaluations by the specialists. I'm taking them. And I've been taking antioxidants ever since. So, you know, it's one of those things. And it's the same thing with NAD+. I worked with a company called Leap Years, great supplement. And I was so convinced with the science that they went through to prove the benefits of these NAD plus supplements, that it boosts your own NAD plus, that I started taking it a version for people. And again, I've only done it for a couple of months. I can't tell you for sure whether it's working. It's supposed to enhance your memory and your focus and all these things. And your activity levels, and I think it's great. I do that anyway. I can only say that I still have not yet forgotten to take the NAD plus supplements every morning. So maybe it's helping. I don't know. But anyway, no, it's I'm a big fan. Any supplement that's not going to hurt, I'm a fan of. As long as it might help, it's worth it. Okay, so all of you, thanks for joining me. I know it was a little over. Thanks for joining me. Any questions that I did not get to, and you would like answered, you do not have to wait till Sunday. You can call me anytime. Send me a message on Instagram. Go to drjeff@petliferadio.com. I will get all of my things. Can I tell if my big floppy ear dog is an ear infection or just chronic dirty ears? I clean all the time. He's shaking his head, scratching his but what's this? But they don't smell bad. So the only way to find out is have them seen. We take a swab, a culture swab. First of all, it's just a cytology. On the cytology, we take the swab, put it on a slide, looking for bacteria and yeast. And if it's just wax and that's it, then you just have a heavy, dark, dirty, floppy ear dog. But if there are bacteria or are yeast growing, then an appropriate medication would be helpful. So smell is not the only criteria. The fact that there's a frequent discharge that's recurring is enough for me to say, you know what, we probably should intervene a little bit. Let's get some better answers for you. So I would recommend a thorough cleaning by the vet and called a cytology. And if the cytology shows a lot of bacteria, yeast is easy because they're most of the ear medications will take care of yeast. But if there's a lot of bacteria, rods or cocci, you might then want to do a culture. And the culture will tell you exactly the best antibiotic, the most efficient to take care of the problem. special gear for anybody who might brush your dog's teeth. We'll get to this when I do my demo, Langley Imar, but the toothbrush sleeves, little rubber sleeves that go over your finger, they're great. However, most of them, we're seeing more and more better ones. Most of them, the bristles were the same material. Those, in my opinion, are worthless, okay? But now they have them. It's the same rubber sleeve, but the bristles are real toothbrush bristles. I find it a lot easier to work. And when I show you my technique, where I get the dog from behind, not at him, for some reason, the same dog who just rejects the ability to brush their teeth when you go at them, but when I go from the back, they're fine. And when you do it, you're hugging them while you're doing it, they get their treat. Every time that you finish, a second later, they get their treat. And you tell them how good they are, that I find that works much better, and they seem to tolerate it much better. So you might want to try that. I have to demo it for you to show you. It's really easy. All right. I think we hit everybody. All right. Anyway, time to go. Thank you for joining me today here on Pet Life Radio and Instagram Live. As always, if you have any questions in the future, you can always reach out to me. I'd love to help you out as much as I can. If you are in LA, look me up. Have a great week, everybody. See you next week. Bye-bye.
Let's Talk Pets every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.